Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Really excited to welcome to our program today, author George Lakey. We're going to talk to him not only about his new book, Viking Economics, How the Scandinavians Got It Right and How We Can Too, but also what it's been like for him to look backwards and to be able to see the lessons that we can learn from others that we should not be afraid of, that we can be able to use to be able to not only to build a society that we want, but also improve on society the way that we say that we want as well. The interesting thing about George's book as well is that it does show us that we can learn from the past and we can learn from the examples of others, and that's something that we shouldn't be afraid to do. We'll talk to George about what led him to write the book and what he hopes you as readers are able to take away from it. George, hello to you and welcome to the program.
Hi, good to talk to you.
Well, George, the pleasure is definitely all mine. I want to say one of the big takeaways when I was first trying to tell someone what I got from this book is that we should not be afraid to ever learn. And I think what you really show us in this book is that in really all aspects of our lives, whether we're talking about, you know, the welfare of our children, about the importance of being able to encourage and empower women, or even being able to realize how we can improve things like healthcare, that we can be able to look at the examples of others and build upon those. Was that one of the big takeaways that you hope that people did take away from the book?
Oh, very much so. I mean, after all, let's look at us, ourselves in the United States. One of the advantages that we've had of a federal system is that there are all these states doing various kinds of experiments. And it's very common for states to look over each other's shoulders and see what's working and pick things up. So this is not a new concept to us. And it's certainly not new to the world because, I mean, the United States was the first to do major national parks. And now there are hundreds of countries, over 100 countries, that have set aside land to do major national parks. They've copied us. Why shouldn't we copy them when they do things that work well?
Yeah. And so I guess an obvious question would be, as I said, the subtitle of the book, George, is How the Scandinavians Got It Right and How We Can Too. I mean, talk to us about what led you to the Norwegians and also, of course, the way that they were able to do things. What led you there as an example?
Well, that's a funny story because what led me to the Norwegians was falling in love with a Norwegian woman when I was a young guy and following her to Norway and marrying her 5 days after I got off the ship and then plunging into learning the language because for one thing I wanted to find out what it was the priest said that he said when he married us. So that was my plunge into Norway. I was there really for her and then getting to know her family and getting to know her language and her culture. And I was just fascinated. It was a kind of stranger in a strange land situation because I kept running into things that they were doing that were pretty different from what there are some things very like we do, but also some things that were pretty different. And I was curious about what the rationale was and how it was working out for them.
Yeah. For sure, for sure. And I think for me, I mean, I'm always into learning, George, and I encourage that for our audience as well because I think we can be able to learn so much from the examples of others no matter where they are. There are two aspects I'd love for us to discuss in this conversation. One that you talk about in the book is what we can learn, of course, in their example when it comes to women and how women are treated, especially as leaders, but also, of course, the importance of being able to work with individuals who are, you know, for one thing, trying to make life better for themselves. I mentioned to you before we went on here, one of the chapters that really struck me is a preventing poverty. And in that chapter, you talk about something that a lot of people are dealing with and that is the prison system and what happens when prisoners come out. I want to read just a bit of what you talk about in that chapter because I think it's so interesting. You use a quote from Time Magazine reporting that within 2 years of their release, 20% of Norway's prisoners end up back in jail in the UK and the United States. The figure hovers between 50% and 60%. And the interesting thing that I thought was so fascinating in that chapter is that you went on to say this, the study found that there was a high association between employment and staying out of trouble. Once again, the investment in job rehabilitation and training and job placement created a win-win-win. The former inmates and their families won, crime was reduced, and more people took a step out of poverty. I want to talk about that for a moment because I think it makes perfect sense. But why do you think the United States still struggles so much with helping individuals who are coming out of prison and being able to not only to be useful in society, but also to be a great part of society?
I really don't think we understand the huge advantage it is to making upfront investment in individuals. That's what they're doing with the prison system in Norway and the other countries in the Nordic model. They really believe in fact, that was one of the things that that was one of the economic contributions that they made in the world of theory in the first place when they were developing this model. They said that economic productivity will be increased insofar as we invest in the individuals who are the workers and can be the workers. Of course, if their children can be the workers when they grow up. And so that principle just applied over and over and over leads you to the prison system, because why should society be laying out all this money to keep people behind bars when those very same people can be out earning money and paying taxes? And I've talked with Norwegians about that. They say, well, this is easy to figure out. We'd much rather have people out in jobs paying taxes than have them inside at our expense. It's a great way to save taxes, is not to have to pay that. And so, but it does mean upfront investment. It's nothing to just hope, as the U.S. tends to do, just hope that somehow people will do better once they get out of prison. Hope is not appropriate in this situation. What makes much more sense is to put the upfront investment, which means devoting serious rehab attention to people when they're in jail, making sure that they're incarcerated close to relatives so that they can renew and reconcile if there's reconciliation to be done, and stay close to community so they can go back to community and do better. And also working with the attitudes of these folks, and part of that attitude is that they regard prisoners as people who very often have lost self-respect, and that's why they've offended. Even that's why they've killed, why they've raped. They've lost their own self-respect, and the way they can get that respect back includes being respected in turn by the system. So the system, for example, doesn't put them away for life. The 23 years length is the longest sentences go. So people really have an expectation, and most of the sentences are much shorter than that. So people really have the expectation when they go to jail, yeah, I'll be out of here. And what will I do then? Will I just, put myself back in the slammer? No, I want to be a productive citizen. And then they get the support to do that.
For sure. And I think that is something, again, that all of us can benefit from. We're going to build on that. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. George Lakey is our guest for this segment. He's the author of the new book, Viking Economics, How the Scandinavians Got It Right and How We Can Too. George, I'm a big optimist myself in life. I always like to look at the glass as being half full and not looking at the darker side of things. I love the fact that the way that you approach this book is very, very optimistic, that we can learn, that we can do better, that there are great things out there. When did you get to a place when you realized that all was not lost? Because unfortunately, not everyone shares your optimism. I mean, how were you able to sustain that throughout your life?
Well, it was partly that encounter with the Nordic model, because when I went over there, I had no idea what their history was. All I knew was that a whole lot of Norwegians and Swedes and Danes and Icelanders had come to the United States at some point, 100 years ago, something like that, more than that sometimes, and that they had been fleeing from something. But I was pretty vague about that. And so I looked into the history and found out that a century ago they were in terrible shape. people were anything but optimistic about their futures. They had a pretend democracy. I mean, it was they did have parliament and they had free elections, but it was a pretend democracy because their economic elite over there really made the decisions. And so they were stuck in oppression and terrible poverty, and so they fled to the United States, and so a lot of, and Canada, and there are a lot of U.S. citizens who have ancestry, of course, from over there. And so so they were taking a chance. They were crossing the ocean. They were going to try to do better, and they did do better. But what really struck me was that over there they also did better. That is, they got optimistic and started developing social movements that pressed their economic elite, pushed them out of dominance, and enabled those societies, therefore, to invent the Nordic model, which is done so well by them. So their very change from being a wreck a century ago, turning themselves around and becoming top of the charts, top of the international charts, really says to me, well, optimism is warranted. It's possible to make a very big positive change.
Right. And again, it goes into so many different areas. I mentioned earlier in my introduction, George, when it comes to the role of women, and you addressed that in the book, but also when it comes to services as well, like healthcare. And I think, again, there one of the things that you noticed yourself in your travels and in the work that you did was what you called individuals that you got to see as honeybees. You said that they were cross-pollinating. Sometimes a policy or best practice did not travel well, they said, but there were plenty of successes. Do you think that also has helped you along the way, surrounding yourself with people who also share that optimism, but also are looking for answers instead of focusing on problems?
Well, another part of my explorations, in addition to living in Norway with my wife as a youngster, was also participating in the civil rights movement in our country. And you're totally right. I was surrounded by optimists. I was surrounded by people willing to go through enormous sacrifice because they believed that America could do better than it was doing back in that horrible day when discrimination was at every turn, and it was legal discrimination. It was actually the law said that people should discriminate against black people at that time. And there were all those optimists who were, I'm white, I happen to be European American, and so I participated in that, not at the same degree of risk that the folks I was involved with were taking. And I got to see tremendous courage and tremendous faith and hope. And I thought, whoa, does that pay off? And then I got to see year by year our country change and change and change. And of course, it hasn't changed nearly enough. But to go through the changes that we did go through was only possible because there were people who were optimistic enough to say, we're going to stake even our lives. We're going to stake our lives on the chance that there can be change.
Right. You write this in the book, in the chapter, How Relevant is the Nordic Model to the United States? For those who have the print edition of the book, you write this about what you concluded in the work you've been able to do, and I know also over your many years of travel, George, I just want to read a part of it. You say this: my conclusion is that because cultural difference does matter, we should let that fact influence the model we create for our country, but not stop exploring the potential of other successes. One advantage of global diversity is that it produces a greater abundance of experiments to access. As we consider adapting others' best practices, we want to improve on them by using our own strengths. The temptation we need to avoid, I love this part, however, is diluting others' proven practices instead of improving them. The example of public health insurance clearly shows the downside of half measures and also reveals that the claims of culture can be exaggerated. I thought this was interesting, and I want to talk about this, George, because I think I don't understand it. I personally have benefited from being able to take what others have learned and have gathered and been able to personally use it for myself and to be able to, you know, put my own personality on it, my own spin on it. I'm definitely not the first radio personality out there, just like you're not the first author, but I think we all definitely have something to offer. Why do you think there's such a resistance to this idea, that there are others who might actually have an idea that we can benefit from?
Well, the resistance usually comes from people who have a stake in the status quo. Usually have some way. It might be their status, you know, they want to be looked at in just the same way, and don't want to admit a mistake. Or it might be their financial stake in keeping things a particular way that creates that resistance. An example of exactly what you're talking about is the studies that show that educational outcomes are improved when children are in small classrooms rather than large classrooms. That's been established over and over and over. Well, when those studies were done in Scandinavia, the conclusion was, okay, so we'll put them in smaller classrooms. We won't have so many children in the class. And that was implemented, period. In the United States, there were efforts in some school districts to do that, and now the trend is back into larger classes. Why? Because there isn't the money. Why isn't there the money? Because taxes were cut on the well-off people. Taxes were cut on corporations. So there's less money flowing to the treasury, and therefore less money to pay teachers, and therefore the children take the hit, in contradiction to the studies. So that's an example of how the vested interests of, you know, considered it more important to reduce their taxes than to teach our children, even though the economics of that are very clear. One reason why the Nordics outperform our economy is because they invest hugely in education. And we have been refusing to do that lately because it's been more important to tax cuts for to do tax cuts for the rich. So I think that's the main reason why there's this resistance to applying stuff that is common sense or applying stuff that we discover through research, is because if we apply it, there's somebody or other who might have to fork out some money in order to take care of that problem, and those folks don't want to fork out that money.
Yeah, I think that is the thing. So what is your hope, George, as you have been discussing the book in conversations like this and others, what is your hope that readers, no matter who they may be or where they may live, what is your hope that they're able to take away from it?
Well, I've been doing book touring now since July 12th when the book was released, so it's still a new book out. And I've been in the New England, I've been running around there, I've been running around in the Midwest, North Dakota, and Iowa and Minnesota, and also in the far west, Washington State, Alaska. I've been traveling a lot, and I'll keep on traveling a lot. And what I keep finding from the people that I get to meet in the bookstores and the churches and whatever kinds of meetings we have is people get a more optimistic view. That is, they say, oh, this isn't just, say, you know, Bernie Sanders' imagination.
Right.
Or some kind of utopian writer who says, let's do, you know, wouldn't this be a wonderful thing? Well, it's not just that. It's actually practiced with 60 plus years of track record that anybody can go over and observe. So there's no mystery. It's not on some other planet. It's just across the Atlantic. Anybody can see for themselves and see that it actually works and has worked decade in and decade out, and that it's an economic system that outperforms our own. So the very fact that we're not talking vision in the sense of imagination, we're talking about a proved model that works better than ours, and people brighten up about that and say, oh, when I have arguments with people about how, you know, people who say, well, capitalism is always better and the free market is always better, I haven't felt a lot of confidence in being able to take a different point of view. But now I realize that it's actually proven that the Nordic system works better. And so now I feel a lot more confidence. Well, let's go. Let's do this.
Yeah. think that's it. And again, that optimism can continue to spread, George. Great conversation with you. Again, everyone, George Lakey has been our guest. Viking Economics is the title of his new book, How the Scandinavians Got It Right and How We Can Too. Again, that optimism even in the title. It is available through our friends at Amazon.com. If they don't have it at your favorite bookstore, you can always ask them to order for you. They'll be more than happy to do that for you. And George, how can our audience stay connected with you and maybe get a peek at that tour schedule?
Oh, yes. You know, I don't have my website up yet.
Okay.
So I need to get more optimistic about getting my website up. Thanks for the reminder.
Well, look, we definitely did encourage them to be able to get the book and definitely be searching for you for sure, George. I'm really excited for the time to be able to speak with you. The book is published by Melville House Publishing, so we definitely want to invite our audience to definitely go to their website, which is www.mhpbooks.com. Again, that's www.mhpbooks.com. And, George, it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime. I'm looking forward to staying connected with you.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Well, the pleasure's definitely all mine, George. Thank you. And we definitely want to thank our good friends at Gail Leander Public Relations for setting up this conversation with us for today. I want to thank all of you, our audience, for tuning in, both on the radio side and online, for this edition of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with George, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media network. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb, or you can go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Click on the link there. You can listen to the show completely for free and share with your friends from there. We actually have tagged George's publisher on Twitter, which is at Melville House. That's where you all can find them there. So you can definitely stay connected with their account there. So make sure you all, again, click on that link. Again, as I said, you can share it from there and then, of course, be able to catch the replay too. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.